good to be with everybody tonight, and here to study God's word. We're continuing our study in the book of Ecclesiastes. We're in chapter 7. And in chapter 7, Solomon really starts talking about just some kind of general wisdom that he's learned. You know, in several of these chapters, he's taken specific topics, and you're going to see some of that in this area. Chapter 7 is a bit longer than ones we've seen before, and it's got a lot of different stuff in it. So we're going to read through it, and then we're going to dive into studying in detail. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear a rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of a fool. This is also vanity. Surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason, and a bribe debases the heart. The end of a thing is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. Do not say, "Why were the former days better than these?" For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, and profitable for those who see the sun, for wisdom is a defense, as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Consider the work of God, for who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. I have seen everything in my days of vanity. There is a just man who perishes in his righteousness, and a wicked man who prolongs life in his wickedness. Do not be overly righteous, nor be overly wise. Why should you destroy yourself? Do not be overly wicked, nor be foolish. Why should you die before your time? It is good that you grasp this, and also not remove your hand from the other, for he who fears God will escape them all. Wisdom strengthens the wise more than 10 rulers of the city, for there is not a just man on earth who does good and does not sin. Also, do not take to heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you, for many times also you, your own heart has known that even you have cursed others. All this I approved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. As for that which is far off and exceedingly deep, who can find it out? I applied my heart to know, to search and seek out wisdom and the reason of things, to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. And I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be trapped by her. Here's what I have found, says the preacher, adding one thing to the other to find out the reason, which my soul still seeks, but I cannot find. One man among a thousand I have found, but a woman among all these I have not found. Truly this only have I found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many schemes. Wow, there's a lot in this chapter. So let's go back to verse 1 and start there. There's a section here where Solomon talks a lot about kind of contrasting wisdom and foolishness, and also joy or feasting and mourning and death. And it's a little bit complicated, but I think we'll try to piece it all together here so you can see it. Verse 1, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Well, a good name being better than precious ointment sounds like something right out of Proverbs. And you'll see a lot of these statements of wisdom, short statements of wisdom, like Solomon has in Proverbs, in Ecclesiastes as well. He's the same author. But here he's talking about a good name. What does it mean to have a good name? You know, I have known people in my life who you hear the name that they were given at birth and you just say, bless their heart, you know, because their name wasn't that great. Or their last name was so hard to pronounce that no one could ever say it right, you know, things like that. But he's not talking about that. He's talking about the honor and respect that goes along with someone's name. Sometimes that's an inherited honor and respect. If your parents were wise and good, they may have developed a good name, a good reputation for the family name. And then when they pass it to you, it's up to you to continue that and to respect it and to build on it. But as an individual, you gain a good name by being wise and being good and people seeing you. You know, that's the whole point here. A name is something someone else calls you by. And so it's about having your works be visible, not for pride, not to gain a false honor from people, but that you're out doing good and it impacts the world. It's better than precious ointment. It's better than anything you can buy. And it's also one of the most expensive things to repair if you lose it or if you damage it by wickedness. And then he says, and the day of death is better than the day of one's birth. And that seems a little strange because, you know, we think of a birthday as a day of happiness, a day of joy when someone's born, and the day that somebody dies as being a day of sadness and loss and grief. But remember the perspective that Solomon is taking here. You know, he's saying, I've looked through life, I've done it all, I've seen everything, and everything in life doesn't profit in the end because you're going to die, and nothing you've done in your life, as far as your works that you've done or the riches you've gained or whatever happens, you can't take that with you. Now, we know that from Solomon's perspective in the Old Testament, he saw that everyone went to the grave. Everyone went to the Hadean world, as we talk about sometimes in the Bible. He didn't have this notion of salvation in heaven in mind when he was talking about this. And really, the Old Testament prophets didn't really understand that. They understood that God was going to take care of them, and they understood that there was some sort of a notion of a resurrection, and that they would be judged. They understood all that, but the whole notion of an eternity with God, in joy in the presence of God, was really not in common knowledge. And so when Solomon says this, he's saying the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth because all your toil and troubles are over. All the stuff you had to deal with in earth, all the evil under the sun, remember how many times did he say that? There's a great evil under the sun, and here's what it is. You know, whatever it happens to be, that you, no matter how hard you work, you can never have enough. You know, no matter what you earn, you can't take it with you. No matter how famous you become, in two generations, no one's going to remember. I mean, all the things that he talked about are at an end. It kind of ties into what happens in the next several verses here. Better to go to the house of mourning, that's the mourning with a U as in sadness or grief, than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men. So when he talks about going to the house of mourning, you could take it in two different ways. You could either go to mourn for someone else who's passed away, or to someone who's had it's talking about dying here. Or maybe a situation where you're dying yourself. Better to go to the house of mourning yourself than to the house of feasting. Before this is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. So the goal here is to stay focused on what's eternal. Remember all the stuff that Solomon said earlier about there's no profit. How can a man gain profit with everything he does, with all of his work he does under the sun and his long and tiresome life? And he said there's no profit in all the work you do except to enjoy it while you have it. That's about it. And basically what we found in his other writings, into other chapters, is to make sure that you do good and you obey God. And you're going to see similar things in this chapter. But he says the living will take it to heart. The temporary, the feasting, the laughter, the mirth, the things he's going to talk about, the songs of fools he's going to talk about here in a couple of verses, are all temporary. And a wise man will stay focused on the eternal and take it to heart. Verse 3. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance, the heart is made better. Again, if you just take these things on the surface, it seems kind of strange. You say, well, why is sorrow? No one likes being sorrowful, you know, feeling bad. We'd rather be happy. But what he's talking about here is the effect. Notice what he says. For by a sad countenance is a fancy word for basically means your face. right? For by a sad look on your face, the heart is made better. He's not talking about faking it here. He's talking about being sorrowful and it leading you to improve, making your heart better. You know, we have those verses in the New Testament that talks about godly sorrow. This is kind of an example. There's sorrow in the world. Why are you sorrowful? Either something has happened to you, or, and that might be because there's just evil in the world, or maybe something that you've done, that you've sinned and you've repented of it. But that's what he's talking about, is that those kinds of things. Again, this is about what's important and eternal. What's serious? That these things that you go on help you stay focused on what's important in the long run. Verse 4. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. So the house of mirth would be, the Old Testament equivalent of a comedy club, right? You go there because you want to laugh. You want people to tell you jokes. You want to laugh. You just want to laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. And what's going on here is an attitude of not caring. Just about, I just want to feel good right now. I don't care about tomorrow. I don't care about anyone else. In fact, I'm going there to be distracted. I don't want all this stuff to remind me of the difficulties. And, you know, what we've been living through these last few months with the virus and all the other problems that have been happening, we got a lot of reason to be in the house of mourning. You know, just focusing on what's important. There's a phrase that we don't use much anymore. But one of the things you used to hear, probably in my parents' generation, was someone might have a devil-may-care attitude. And the idea of somebody who was that way was sort of like, well, the devil may care, but I don't. You know, it's like they don't care about anything. They're just going to enjoy it, have fun right now, and they're just going to focus on pleasure and selfishness. And that is just the opposite of what Solomon is advocating here. The fool who goes to the house of mirth is that kind of devil-may-care person. I don't care. I just want to have my fun now. I don't care about tomorrow. The wise looks for what's important and eternal. Verse 5, it is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. Again, the same contrast, the eternal goal. That's what the wise man is going to rebuke you about. If a wise man rebukes you, and you know, no one likes to be rebuked. I mean, that's really getting on somebody, right? But if the wise person is doing that, they're trying to help you. They're trying to show you what's valuable and what's eternal. And the Song of Fools is all about instant gratification. You can really see the contrast here in these verses. You know, I don't care. I just want my happiness now. I just want to have fun. Don't bother me with serious things. To, man, don't tell me about that. Don't rebuke me. You know, I want to go listen to my music. I want to go listen to the Song of Fools. Instant gratification versus eternity. That is what Solomon sees through all out. Now, it's interesting to contrast this with something that Solomon said several times. You know, he said, there's nothing good for man to do under the sun except enjoy his labor and enjoy the fruits of his work. It's not when it says here, you know, the heart of mirth, and I talk about, you know, selfishness. I'm not talking about taking care of your necessities or enjoying the blessings that God's given you. I'm talking about frivolity, where you're going to turn your back on the things that are important and serious and eternal and just want to feed your pleasures. Verse 6, for like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. One of the things we don't realize because very few of us ever cook outside on an open fire anymore, unless we're camping, is one of the really common fuels that was used for, especially in the area where Solomon was in Palestine. There's not a whole lot of really big trees there. And if you're going to burn, you know, what we hear, you know, you have a fireplace and you go cut you down a big old oak tree and you've got huge oak logs you're putting in there. They would never put oak logs in a fire. You know, they're going to use sticks and branches and twigs and thorns and whatever they can find. And they would cook them under a pot. They'd use little thin twigs. They wouldn't make a big, huge fire. I remember when we studied the visions of God and we were talking about the fire pot in Abraham's first vision, that we had to understand that what they used to do is they would put whatever kind of sticks, you know, remember they were traveling in the wilderness. They didn't carry lots of firewood. They'd find whatever sticks they could. They'd put it in a clay pot. They'd burn it and heat up the pot. And then they'd take the sticks out and the ashes out, and they'd put their bread on the inside to bake their bread. And so what he's talking about here is something that was really common, the crackling of thorns under a pot. It wasn't like someone went and found a thorn bush so they could burn it. It was like, it was just the common fuel. You use the waste wood and the twigs that weren't good for anything else to be your fuel for your food. But one other aspect about these thorns and these twigs is they flame up quick and then they're gone. They don't last very long at all. You know, if you were going to build a campfire, or you were going to build a fire in your fireplace for the night, you're not going to use little twigs. You may use it to start the fire, but they're not going to last long. And here he's saying that that's like the laughter of a fool. It may pop up and be bright and throw off a lot of light and heat for a second, but then it's gone. It's temporary. Again, that notion of instant gratification and just the vanity and emptiness of it. Verse 7 changes a little bit. The next several verses here talk a little bit about some different aspects of wisdom. Surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason, and a bribe debases the heart. Now, this word oppression here has a couple of different meanings in Hebrew. It means an injury or a fraud or a distress or cruelty, extortion, or oppression. And sometimes you'll see this translated as extortion, whereas somebody, you know, if someone tries to extort something from you, they're threatening you so that you'll do something for them or give them something, very often money. It's kind of the opposite of a bribe. It's like, if you don't give me something, I'm going to hurt you. That's what extortion is. But here he says, surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason. Even the wise are susceptible. And a bribe can debase the heart. You know, how many times in the Old Testament does God talk about not taking bribes and distorting justice, right? Where the rich man can buy his way out of a crime that he's committed. There's plenty of examples of that in the Old Testament and God warning against that. But notice what he's saying here. Even a wise man can be tempted. Even a wise man is susceptible, because he's warning the wise man here. He's not warning the fool. He's saying even a wise man has to be careful, because people will try to extort you and oppress you and bribe you to move away from the truth and from wisdom. And we know that Solomon himself was susceptible to being extorted. And basically, that's what happened with his wives. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later in the chapter. But Solomon's wives, his foreign wives that he married from idolatrous nations, eventually convinced him to build temples for their idols. We don't know if he actually participated in that worship, but he built temples for them to do it, which is all violently opposed to God's will and God's law. So, you know, Solomon himself got trapped in this. Verse 8, the end of a thing is better than its beginning. Now, that is really kind of goes along with the same things we were talking about before. The day of one's death better than the day of one's birth, and the house of mourning versus the house of laughter. But one of the reasons that the end of something is better than its beginning is from there you can see the result for real. How many times have you seen a situation and said, oh, this is going to go this way or that way, or this is going to be great, and then when you get to the end, you go like, wow, it didn't turn out anything like I thought it would. You know, that's part of what I think Solomon's talking about here. Wisdom comes from seeing the results, from walking the road and seeing the end of the road. And thus, the next time when you see a road that looks like it, you have an idea what's going to happen. The second half of the verse, he kind of changes gears a little bit and rolls into verse 9. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. This is advice that everybody should have. And I know there are times when I struggle with being patient, and there's times when I struggle with jumping and getting angry about something. I think one of the things that's happened a lot in our modern internet age with social media and everything else is it's so easy to react strongly to something you see, you know, whether it's on Facebook or YouTube or whatever, to react so strongly before you've even had time to think and consider. And part of it is that's the goal of a lot of that stuff that goes up there, is to basically manipulate your emotions. But notice what he says, the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. So there's a contrast. And then it says, do not hasten in your spirit to be angry. In other words, be patient. For anger rests in the bosom of fools. He's contrasting the patient in spirit who has not hastened to be angry and the proud in spirit who jump to their anger fast like fools. And that's a very strong statement of wisdom here that I think all of us need to take a look at and think about. I don't know how many times it's happened in my life where something will happen and I'll just, my dad used to tell me when I was a little boy, I hadn't thought about this in many years till just now. I had a really hard time with my temper when I was a young boy, and my friends in the neighborhood would like to take advantage of that. And they'd tease me to the point that my dad used to say I flew off the handle. And I'd just go crazy and just scream and crazy and flail and everything else, as I would just be so angry. And I've struggled with that my whole life, as how to control my reactions and how to control my responses. And I think that's what everybody does, is hopefully as they get older and they mature, is you get in front of your feelings and you don't let them dominate you. They still influence you, and that's a good thing, but they don't control you without your wisdom being engaged. You've heard these things before, think before you speak, right? A lot of times we want to shut down that mouth and let our brain get engaged good before our tongue gets moving. It's a lot of the same thought here. Verse 10, do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. This is kind of interesting. How many times have you said, well, the good old days, you know, back in the good old days, we did these things. And here he says, don't talk like that. Why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Why is it not wise to ask that question? That's what he's saying. So how are the days? Where did what happened in the days come from? It really comes from two sources. It comes from God's providence, which Solomon's talked about a lot already, about the things that happens in people's lives, that God makes them happen, and no one can tell what's going to happen to them, you know, tomorrow or the next minute or the next year. And then, of course, sometimes the things that happen to us and happen in our days are because of man making bad decisions or good decisions, either one. I think this is very similar to what James talks about in the book of James, where he says, you know, you should not say, let's go off for a year to the city and buy and sell and get gain. He said, what you should say is that the Lord wills, we will do these things. I think when you say things like, why aren't things like the good old days, you're effectively challenging God's providence. God is wisdom, and he is in control. He does provide for times of peace and plenty and times of difficulty and trouble, times of war and strife. I mean, if you go back and read chapter 3 all over again, right? There's a time for everything under heaven and a season for everything under heaven. It gives you that long list. You know, God has a reason for these things. Yeah, go ahead.
I look at this passage and I think that, you know, we often say, what about the good old days? Well, I think we tend to look at the good old days, trademark, registered, you know, I think we look at that and we are looking at the past with rose-colored glasses. I don't think we're looking at the things objectively. We might forget some of the bad things that might have happened back then, and we only look at the good and have a certain colored view of the past that is unjustified. And so we might not have had the full picture back then either. People love to say that, especially when they're especially the days when they were kids, when they grew up. Oh, the good old days. For me, the good old days were the 80s and the 90s. For you, that you would look at the 80s and 90s and think those weren't the good old days. No. That was, I'm not even going to speculate, whenever you grew up.
Yeah, the 60s and 70s.
And for someone who's older, they would say you know, whenever they grew up. So I think it's one of those things that we have as human beings, this tendency to look at the past with rose-colored glasses, that we just that we don't look at it objectively.
It's an interesting thought. I think that's right. It's pretty obvious for a lot of people, but you know, I'm thinking too about, I mean, how are we going to remember these days? How are we going to remember the year of the virus, right? And the isolation and everything else and all the other strife that's going on. You know, it's interesting to think about that. And of course, Solomon's writing this at the end of his life. He's looking back at his life and he said, I did a lot of great things, you know, but he said at the end of my life, I looked back and I said, for real, it's just vanity. And I think part of the reason he's saying it isn't wise, I think you're right, is that people tend to have selective memories. Notion of saying that, you know, God is going to decide what your time is going to be like. You know, my great-grandfather my great-grandfather would have been during the Civil War. My grandfather grew up in World War I and World War II. My father grew up in World War II. You know, I grew up in the Vietnam War, right? I mean, it's just going on. And you could say there are things that are better or worse about different times. But at the end of the day, all of us have the same choices in life. Are we going to obey God? Are we going to seek wisdom? Are we going to plan for eternity? And some of this, you know, is kind of poo-pooing today by putting rose-colored glasses on it tomorrow. I think you're right.
You know, it kind of goes with the whole theme of the book, especially when we see the first chapter, where we see that first chapter that talks about there's nothing new under the sun. And that's the same for back then as it is for today. The issues and the problems that exist now are issues and problems that existed before in days past. I mean, a pandemic is nothing new. In the history of the world. I mean, it's new for all of us because the last one was over 100 years ago, or the last one that affected all of us was over 100 years ago. So that's still nothing new under the sun.
Yeah. So I'm definitely not going to get through this whole chapter because I'm only halfway through. So I think I'm going to take just a few verses more here in chapter 7, and then we'll stop and we'll leave it for next week. So verse 11, wisdom is good with an inheritance and profitable to those who see the sun. For wisdom is a defense as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Now, this is a case where Solomon takes some very earthly wisdom, right? It's like, if you have money, are you likely to be able to spare yourself some trouble in the world? Sure thing, right? That's what we say. But he said, even though wisdom is a defense like money is a defense, and if you happen to have both, if you're wealthy and wise, if your wisdom is good with an inheritance, it's profitable. But notice what he says at the end of verse 12, but the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. That money by itself doesn't, but wisdom does. The wisdom in the end is better than wealth. And, you know, several times we've seen it here in Proverbs where Solomon says, a wise man who happens to be poor is way better than a rich man who's a fool. You know, you'll see similar things like that in Proverbs. Verse 13, consider the work of God, for who can make straight what he has made crooked? And you'll see versions of this kind of verse, something similar in Job. There's definitely things in Proverbs about it and some in the Psalms. You know, this is just a clear statement. God is in control. He's made this world the way he wants it, and he operates it the way he wants it. And he's not asking for your permission, and he's not asking for your approval. And he's going to make it work his own way. You know, our job is to be wise and to seek what matters in life and to seek the eternal. And God has told us, he's promised us, and he's made it clear to us in his word that if we do that, he's going to bless us, even if we have trouble in life. You know, you don't find a single godly person in the Bible who didn't suffer. I don't know of any. And, you know, Stephen, you might know of one. I can't think of one who didn't have suffering and trouble in their life. They may have had good times too, but they had suffering and trouble. Everybody does. All of us have joy and all of us have sorrow. And this kind of where he sees here in the last of this verse, verse 14 is where we'll stop. In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider, surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. All have joy and sorrow. God is in control. When you're having a good day, be joyful, be thankful. When you're having a difficult time, consider. You know, he said the same thing a little earlier, right? He said, if you're in the house of mourning, you're going to take it to heart. If you're sorrowful, you're going to take it to heart. You're going to consider. You're going to think about it. You're going to reflect on what matters and what's important. And here he says very clearly, he says, but in the day of adversity, consider that surely God has appointed one as well as the other. Is it God's will? Yeah. Or it wouldn't happen. Now, that doesn't mean that if somebody chooses to do something evil, that it's God's will for them to do that evil. What it does mean is that God created a world where he allowed people to make choices. And in some cases, people choose evil and it causes harm to other people. And in that sense, he has set things up that way. But when you think about prosperity, he says, be joyful. Enjoy the good times. When you have bad times, remember, God has a reason and a purpose. He is in control. It's like that thing I've said a number of different times that I've learned. My little bit of wisdom here. I'm not going to put mine up next to Solomon's, but one of the things I've learned in this life is when something bad happens, instead of saying, why me, Lord? Why is this happening? The thing I've learned to say is, Lord, what do you want me to learn? How can I learn from this? What are you teaching me? How are you preparing me for your service? And it might be a terrible thing happened in my life, and I've had some terrible things. But in all cases, I can look back now and see how God has been teaching me, preparing me for his service, preparing me for his work. And in that, I can rejoice even if it's going through some really rough times. So we'll stop there. And Stephen, you can go ahead and do your lesson now.